using a handy talkie there, Christopher. If you had had a chance, and maybe you did, to go to Ham Radio University last January, that was held at Briar Cliff College, quite a number of the people, including Bob Greenberg's son, met him there, and they were building these ground plane antennas out of simple pieces of copper wire on a so-called SO239 connector. That's a type UHF chassis connector. And depending on what kind of a connector you've got on the top of your handy talkie, many of them have a B and C connector, which, by the way, stands for Bayonet Kneel Councilman. Mr. Kneel and Mr. Councilman invented that connector, an extremely well-kept secret among the radio people. And so that's one of the popular connectors. Some of them have a 3-millimeter connector, as it's called. It's also called a SMA connector. There's various kinds of connectors on the top of your radio. There's various kinds of connectors on the, on the coax cable that you can buy. And so quite often you'll run into incompatibility. If my cable has a type N connector on it, and the top of my handy talkie has a BMC connector on it, the good news is that Radio Shack, for instance, among many other places on the internet, but Radio Shack in their bubble pack, have connector adapters. So you can buy an adapter where one end of it plugs directly into the top of the handy talkie, and the other end of it plugs into your coaxial cable. And you've got to worry about two things here altogether. One, what kind of input and output connector is on the adapter, BNC, Type N, UHF, miniature UHF, SMA, there's a zillion kinds of connectors. And each one of those connectors come in two flavors, so-called male and female. Usually the way the center pin is set up determines whether or not you call the connector male or female. And I think you can use your imagination on that one. Maybe that information helps a little bit. So you're going to probably, if you want to have real good performance on your handy talkie, if that's what you're using, or the 2-meter rig you're using right now, to have good performance, you'd like the antenna to be as high as possible. Whether or not the antenna is a very elaborate and expensive one is secondary. How high the antenna is primary. You can take a simple coat hanger antenna that's worth 50 cents to build, put it on the chimney of your house with a reasonable piece of coax cable, for instance, going to it, and you'll get a tremendous amount of increase in range, performance, and as you were talking earlier today, you can start finding out what kind of range you can get when talking to various repeaters. So,
repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
If you haven't already built or decided to build a better antenna, hang it in the attic or on the chimney of the house or on a tree, something that's high up. You have to choose a piece of cable and worry a little bit about its insertion loss, although it doesn't have to be perfect at first. If you buy a small diameter coax cable that has quite a bit of loss, that's not a showstopper. The fact that you pick up so much increase in performance by the extra altitude, even if you're using a somewhat lossy piece of cable, don't let that discourage you. Try it. And the cable itself is money in the bank. You'll be using that cable for the rest of your life if you buy a reasonable brand name. And you can always chop it up into smaller pieces, put connectors on it to make jumpers for various pieces of equipment in the shack, and so on. Maybe this is some of the information you're looking for, Christopher.
You would know what it is in certain loads. You have to explain it.
Okay. All cable has got insertion loss. The smaller diameter, the more the loss. If I had a piece of cable that has a loss of 3 decibels, for instance, at your operating frequency, 3 decibels is a fancy way of saying a 2-to-1 power ratio. You put 2 watts into the bottom of the cable. If it's got 3 decibels of loss, 1 watt will come out the other end, and the loss of the cable, it's taking that RF energy and losing it by turning it into heat. Everything does that a little bit, and depending on what brand of cable you buy and what diameter and and how much you use determines the insertion loss. You'll have to be listening a lot to learn some of these crazy terms. I know they're not easy to understand all at first, Chris. KC2, Zebra Alpha Foxtrot. K2RIW. My name is Vic. You got it, Chris.
Comment W2RU.
Stand by, let Chris talk first. Go ahead, Chris.
R-H-T. It's a dual bander, if you don't already know. And it's got an SMA connector on it. So I'm thinking about getting the Arrow open sub J-pole antenna. And that has an SO2 something.
Yeah, SMA is a rather popular connector on handy talkies. And to adapt from SMA to an SO239 or PL259 connector, those kind of adapters do exist at Radio Shack, among other places. Whiskey 2, India Uniform, start off with your name, sir, and go right ahead with your comment on this subject. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Okay, name here is Dennis, and Chris, welcome to the hobby. For somebody who's been around for over 45 years since my high school days, I hope you get as much of a enjoyment out of it over the time. But with these newer handy talkies using the SMA connector on the top, it is often very useful if you look around at the ham shacks for these things that sort of have about maybe 9 inches between the SMA connector and the SO239 at the other end. In other words, give yourself a little bit of flexibility there, because that SMA connector, it's possible to snap it off, and then you're going to be sending the rig back to Yaesu to have them change that out. If you have the flexibility, if you happen to mishandle the HT or it falls out of your hand or something of that sort, you might want to consider looking for these things. The Hamfest, they normally go for about $10 or $11. I know it's a nuisance at that rate, and you may stop and think about it and figure, I don't need this thing, but in all seriousness, the darn SMA connector on top of the handheld is a little bit too fragile, too flimsy, as compared with years ago when we used to have BNCs, and even some of the older ones in the first days of FM repeaters had the VL, no, I don't think it's, I don't have the right designation. They used to just call it a UHF connector. Looks like an SO239, PL259, whatever, and just bigger, you know, to accommodate the RG8 cable if you were using something like that to your J-pole. So seriously consider, if you can find these things, the Hamfest season is sort of down for the moment. There might be one or two between now and September, but certainly...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Dennis, you timed out the machine for about 45 seconds, I'm sorry to say, but you got a very good suggestion there, Christopher. The SMA connector on the top of a handy talkie is not very strong, and if you simply put an adapter, which is a very rigid, solid chunk of metal, directly on it, and then connected a cable to it, you would have the problem of possibly breaking off the SMA connector. So if you put a flexible, small diameter piece of coaxial cable with an SMA connector on the end of it, directly on top of the handy talkie, and that piece of flexible cable only has to be, let's say, 6 inches long, but it's now, because it's flexible, it's not going to be flexing your connector on the top of the handy talkie. Then it, on the other end of that cable, it then picks up your real piece of transmission line that goes to the higher location. That would be a much better way of going. When it comes to buying a piece of flexible cable, which has an SMA connector on one end, an SMA male most likely, and then something like a UHF female on the other end, that's a somewhat expensive piece of cable. Once you are ready for that adaption, in other words, once you own the transmission line, let me drop. Once you own the transmission line that's going to get your radio signal up to a higher altitude to the second antenna that you're going to buy or build, all you've got to do, in my opinion, is come back on this repeater and mention to Mel and Dick that you need a piece of flexible cable to act as an adapter with SMA at one end and whatever connector you choose for your transmission line on the other end. Somebody is going to volunteer to give one of those to you. As Dennis mentioned, to buy exactly that piece of unusual cable, somebody's going to cost you, it's going to charge you $10. And unless you've got pretty deep pockets, that's not going to be pleasant. Somebody will volunteer for that when you're ready for that. Over to you, Dennis, and see if that all makes some sense to you. KC2, Zebra Alpha Foxtrot, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, fella.
Yeah, W2IU, sounds like somebody else is trying to get in there too, Dick. Go and listen to them.
I first wanted to
see it, Dick. This is Mark N2FLS. Yeah, on one of the Yahoo groups, there's a group for the Kenwood THF6A tri-band small walkie-talkie with the SMA. I would never use these myself. But some of the people are using, there's two versions of the SMA to BNC. One of them is like a short, stubby one, and it takes the stress from the connector, from the SMA connector, and transfer it to the case, because it leans on the case, basically. So that might be another way to go. And some people don't have a problem with that on that site. But personally, I wouldn't do it. I think you're correct. Just want to let you know another option at 2FLS.
Very fine, Mark. So, in other words, there is a kind of an adapter that leans on the case as well as picking up the SMA connector to give it mechanical support, so you're not giving it the bending moment of a cantilever, so to speak, with the rest of the cable coming out of it. That's one approach. If the cable he's going to use at first, if he can tolerate the insertion loss, if the first small piece of it was RG58 cable, which is itself very flexible, and then he flips over to maybe a better piece of cable for the majority of the run, that would not exert a heck of a lot of bending moment on the connector. Once you know that that connector coming out of the top of your handy talkie, Christopher, is a little bit weak, don't push it sideways real hard, if you know what I mean. It's called cantilever bending, or we're bending it like a diving board, so to speak. Don't do that, because if you do break it, life will get kind of complicated. And so treat it with tender loving care and adapting. You'll eventually learn the names of these crazy connectors. Each manufacturer has his own favorite connector for reasons of size, cost, frequency response, insertion loss, and so on. So there's quite a number of RF connectors. I could direct you to a website where you see pictures of these. In fact, one of them is a website by WA1MBA, Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike Bravo Alpha .org. Whiskey Alpha 1 Mike Bravo Alpha .org. That's the website of Dr. Tom Williams. And one of the many things you can select on his, one of the many things you can select on his first page is a bunch of pictures of adapters, of cable connectors. And he will show you a picture of quite a number of connectors, a nice close-up picture with the description of what it's called, what frequencies it's used for, and so on. So this is some of the jargon you'll have to pick up as you become more and more familiar with ham radio hardware. We've hit 9 o'clock. We've gone through the first list, to my knowledge. I think we haven't skipped anyone yet. And so, Mel, go over to your mailbag before it gets late. K2KEY. K2RIW in the TechNet.
W2I, you had a question.
Were you one of the original people signing in at the very beginning of the net, Dennis?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you had four. Christopher was after me, but that's okay. I understand under his circumstances. I'm glad to help out anyhow.
Okay. I see your name on the list, and I goofed. Let me pick up with Mel first. Dennis, will you be able to wait around a little while?
Yeah, once you get to be retired, you find out you're dealing with six Saturdays and one Sunday.
Those guys that live in New Jersey, they know what they're doing. That's where Dennis lives. Go ahead, Mel. K2K, what? Dennis, I'm sorry, I skipped over you. I see you on my list. I goofed. K2KEY, K2RIW, go ahead, Mel.
Hey, this is K2KEY. Just one final word on the SMA connectors. I have a piece of equipment. How does that connector and what I do? Basically, I take the coax cable and I put a rubber band to the case. In other words, I hold the cable as a strain relief, you could call it, with the rubber band around the case and the cable. So that's just a quick way of relieving the strain on the SMA connector. Also, Christopher, if you're interested in that antenna that Dick was talking about, the ground plane antenna made with the SO239 connector, if you look in any of the handbooks, ARRL antenna handbook has been featured in every almost every handbook how to put it together. So it's an easy description of that antenna and how to make one. Very, very easy, very cheap. I'll be able to drop it.
Yeah, we should indicate a website he can go to which will show you how to build one of those. On top of that, Mel, a little bit of noise on your signal. Are you running full power tonight? Back to you, Mel.
Okay. Yeah, now I'm on full power. I get all the time. Normally for the local repeaters, I don't really need much power. All right, is this a little better?
Fantastic. Dead full quieting. Now you sound hi-fi.
Okay. Kind of forget, you know, I also got to check to make sure the beam is facing out towards the repeater. Yeah, right. Okay. Anyhow, yeah, let's do a quickie here from the mailbag. And like I said, I had a lot of questions and people, you know, comments and all, but let's try to stick strictly to ham radio as its basics. Our group wants to get together and do a lot of, you know, some backpacking and out to the wilds of the woods and all. What do you suggest is a good antennas to take along on our QRP travels? I've had a number of these questions. Do you have any preference to QRP operations? You just mentioned, you know, for 2 meter activity or what the, you know, basically. And what would you suggest? Anything you can think of that would be apropos for HF, simply, Dick, over.
And we should mention for people who are just joining ham radio, there's a whole lot of Q signals that were used as abbreviations that started in the days of Morse code. Since the letter Q is not very used in the alphabet, QTH means where do you live, QRM means interference, and QRP means I'm running low power, usually less than 5 watts. So if you're one of these enthusiasts that likes fishing with light line, you know, 5-pound test line, ham radio-wise, you're a QRP operator. And many of the wire-like antennas that can be shot up into a tree with a slingshot. And you can buy a special kind of a slingshot, which is intended for hanging antennas in the tree. They work very well. I'll bet you you've used a few of those, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Let me just caution about slingshots. They are not permitted in many of the parks. Like, for instance, the local park here, you cannot use slingshots, bow and arrows and all. What I use, we do have these outings here. We get together and we do run QRP at the different parks at times. What I use is usually just a rubber ball with a string, a light string attached to it. I throw it up over a limb of a tree and stretch out my dipole. Now, let me say something about also about QRP, which is a fascinating way to operate. I mean, it really is a thrill to work a DX station running 5 watts. As Dick says, QRP really means low power. And the purest, let me let it drop. For those who may not be familiar with QRP, it means anything up to about 5 watts DW. That's actually the really the two amperes really cut off is that 5 watts. So it does not mean that you have to run with an antenna that is, you know, very stingy. Well, it's one of these so-called antennas that they will advertise, you know, some little thing that goes in a bag that costs hundreds of dollars that they show you, you know, using and taking in your backpack. You will get more bang out of your dollar, from my experience, if you make up a dipole. And as I said, let me let it drop. Classic dipole, cut as close to the frequency you want to operate, and string it up on a method. Have a rubber ball I have with the string, throw it up over a branch as far as you can, pull up one end, do the same thing at a further end after you stretch it out, and you will do as well as any of those. I know what they're looking at. I won't mention names, but these antennas do run into the hundreds of dollars. And they're very neatly packed. They come in a nice bag and whatever. But believe me, you'll get the same results or even better, as far as I'm concerned, from a common, ordinary dipole that you can string together for a little or no money. That's my opinion, Dick. Go ahead.
KC2, QAQ with the comment. Go ahead, Glenn. I just wanted to add on to what Mel was saying. One of the things I've done a lot of times when, you know, backpacking it or just going to a remote location with a little low-power transmitter like that is my little antenna tuner that's remote is like a little MFJ, but either a small homebrewed antenna tuner or one of these like little MFJ type jobs that's good for, you know, it's really a low-power tuner, but you can put almost open wire lead into these things and tune almost off of anything. Back over to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
KC2ZA,
yes,
for a question.
Go ahead, Chris.
Now, I heard about many different types of dipoles. There's a quarter-wave dipole, half-wave dipole. Flathead dipole is just wavelength size.
When a person uses the word dipole, Christopher, they almost always mean one half-wave dipole. There really is nothing called a quarter-wave dipole. There's a quarter-wave monopole antenna, a quarter-wave ground plane antenna, but that usually is not called dipole. So the word dipole most of the time means half-wave. And so 468 divided by the frequency in megacycles tells you how many feet long it should be to be half-wave. And so in the case of 80 meters, for instance, unfortunately, that's a pretty long length, 132 feet of wire, with an insulator in the center and two insulators on the tips going to strings that go hung over the tree, and the transmission line connects to that center insulator. Now, what Chris is, Glenn was just telling us about is that there's a lot of need for, with modern-day transmitters, so-called no-tune transmitters, there's a lot of need for an antenna tuner. If your dipole is a little bit short or a little bit long physically because you've made a slight error in the length of it, you haven't used it a whole lot of times and tested it, or because of your particular installation, maybe you're hanging the wire over a very dense tree or close to the ground, for various reasons you can end up with the antenna acting a little bit high or lower in frequency than it should. And you could spend the time retuning the length if you had the right kind of a standing wave ratio meter to know when you get in the right direction. Glenn's suggestion is a much easier one. If you do own or have built a device called an antenna tuner, and when you're running at low power, like 5 watts, an antenna tuner can be built with rather easily constructed homebrew inductor and capacitor, variable capacitor usually, and an inductor, maybe a switch for the different taps on the inductor. You can make an antenna tuner. And what the antenna tuner will do is take almost any length of wire, even a random length of wire, just one single wire hung up in the tree coming down to your antenna tuner, and the other end of the antenna tuner goes to a ground wire. As simple as that looks, with the right kind of antenna tuner, that can be a rather high performance antenna. a sloper, so to speak. So any of these antennas will become a lot more forgiving, and Mel's done a lot of experimenting with antenna tuners, so I bet you've got suggestions on that one, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment, W2IU.
Now, just how does that work when you build a homebrew antenna tuner?
Well, the homebrew antenna tuner makes the antenna more forgiving. In other words, as the antenna is mounted, near the gutter of the house or in a very dense tree or close to the ground, all of these things can slightly detune the antenna. The antenna tuner brings the antenna back into tune. I know that sounds a little bit crazy. Every antenna has to first be resonant before it can radiate well. And when I say resonant, I mean you're resonating the antenna radiating system. The combination of the transmission line and the antenna has to be electronically resonant to work well, and an antenna tuner helps you do that. How the antenna tuner does that, I'll admit that's a little bit complicated. Maybe we should go into that one right now. Dennis sounds like he's got a suggestion for you. Let's see what he's got to say. W2 India Uniform, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Oh, W2IU, the only thing I wanted to comment on is a lot of what you're talking about between antenna tuners and resonance of that antenna is more in terms of HF frequencies, 40 meters, 20 meters, 80, and so on. The VHF antennas that Chris might be using with that FT60 are certainly a lot more forgiving as far as the dimensions of them, that it's not as critical. And the chances of needing a VHF antenna tuner are there, yeah, but maybe not as critical a point.
Very good point, Dennis. First of all, we're answering Mel's question from his mailbag, which was for a guy who's going in the field setting up antennas for QRP operation, and we assumed it was HF. Not as many people do QRP operation on VHF. But along the lines of what Dennis is saying is that most VHF rigs, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 450 meg radios, are much more forgiving. We almost never use an antenna tuner on VHF frequencies because the rig doesn't require it. Kind of crazy, but it's the way it is. Whereas on HF antennas, the so-called no-tune rigs that operate between 80 and 10 meters, in other words, between 3.5 megacycles and 30 megacycles, almost every one of those would be happier with an antenna tuner in a field operation, because unless the antenna, when thrown up in the tree and properly installed, has a very good standing wave ratio of 1.5 to 1 or less, the rig will give you marginal performance, and the antenna tuner corrects for that. So do you need it all the time? Probably not, but it's nice to have. You don't have to absolutely start off with all of this jazz. You can be adding them one step at a time. A simple antenna or a simple feed line, later on add an antenna tuner, find ways of getting the antenna up higher. When you throw that rubber ball up in the air and you swing it just right with a coil of string in one hand and a rubber ball and just the right length of string in the other, and you swing it just right, I am curious as to what kind of altitude you can get with that, Mel. I think more than 25 feet would be difficult, whereas 70 feet is easy with a slingshot, and it's unfortunate that New York City will not allow a slingshot. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And KC2QIQ, if you could throw me in for one more comment.
Yeah, Mel first, and then we'll come back to you, Glenn. Go ahead, Mel.
Yes, as far as slingshots and goes, and bow and arrows, and all this kind of other kinds of launching devices, they are strictly prohibited in the New York City parks. I believe it may even be a federal law, because I know besides the park here, it is also prohibited at Floyd Bennett, which presented a bit of a problem for us for our field day, being that we are at a different location. I used to have the high tie-off points on the old building, which of course is closed right now for renovation. So at this other location, I had to come up with an alternate method, and it had to be somewhat unique, and I'll mention how I did it. Okay. They do sell. I did not have to use this particular thing, but what is very popular now, there is a telescopic type of pole that's made out of fiberglass. It collapses down to about 4 feet and goes up to like 40 feet. Very light. I have something similar to that, but alright, it's more of a thing I put together with sections, you know, and made them telescopic. And that's what I use, Dick. Easily to carry, put a hook on the end of it, and you can just easily lift up. I lift the ball up to a branch 30, 35 feet up, and in this case with my pole, I was going up close to about 50 feet, drop the ball over that branch, let the weight of the ball, you really just drop down, it's safe because it's a rubber ball, and pull the antennas up by that method, Dick, over.
N2GYN, comment.
N2GYN. GYN. Recognized, and you're right after Glenn. Interesting, you can get 50 feet out of telescoping fiberglass tubing. Wow. And yeah, that's considerably further than you can flow through a rubber ball, even by using the swinging it around your head type technique, if you know what I mean. Glenn, see how you get around this problem. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I have to admit, on my backpacking routines here, I haven't really done much in the way of carrying 50 feet of pipe with me. Most of the time, I usually try to pack really light if I can. And some of my favorite antennas that I have to say for HF is one is called a Slinky. It's a neat little thing that just kind of like folds right into your backpack, and you just pull it right out, and it's a dipole, and you know, it has ladder line that comes down to the end. And just a couple of other small things I carry along with me, too, is usually a little watt meter and a small VSWR meter. And the one that I have, actually, I've got two different types. One is like it's got the two needles on it. So one needle measures the forward power, the other one measures the reflected. Just to kind of tell you that when you're tuning up that little homebrew antenna tuner or your commercially made antenna tuner, that when you bring that antenna into resonance, you can see the VSWR drop out and the peak power peak up. Neat little things. It slips right into the backpack nice and easy. Another thing I usually bring along with me, Dick, too, is like it's like a big alligator clip that normally you find on jumper cables for car batteries, and I attach like a 12-gauge wire that's about 20 feet long, and it's, you know, stripped on one end. And a lot of times, I'll use that alligator clip and sometimes find a local ground that's around sometimes. Sometimes you're in a campground, you find a fence. You can clamp onto that as your ground or other areas, a flagpole nearby sometimes. You'd be amazed. Little things like that sometimes, without having to go to tremendous heroic efforts to really hang the antenna high, you can find sometimes grounding things that will really improve your QRP experience. Back to you, Dick.
You get back to me, Dick. I'll finish.
Yes, with a question.
Okay, let's find out what John's got to say first, then we'll go to Chris, and then back to Mel. N2GYN, go right ahead with your comment on this subject, John.
Thank you, Dick. Well, one of my other hobbies besides ham radio is surf cast fishing. And anyone that's good with a surf cast pole can easily put a 2 to 4 ounce weight over a 45 foot tree and come pretty accurate within a half a foot each direction. So I didn't hear that mentioned. The other thing I wanted to mention, you told me about the Slinky, whatever. I sent you an email, but I don't know if you got it, because the stuff came up last week. Are you familiar with what one person is marketing as the Cobra antenna, N2GYN?
I think I'm not, John. Although maybe you mailed that to me more than a week ago. Give us a couple of words on the Cobra antenna, John.
Well, I always tell you never to fold over a dipole. Well, what this does is, try to imagine three wire zip cord with three wires. And you have this on both sides of your dipole. But what happens is the ladder line connects to the first row of that wire, goes all the way to the end, connects to the second row, the second wire, comes all the way back, that connects to the third, and then goes all the way out again, almost like a
a giant Z. And the reason for it is so you have enough wire. The logic behind it is so you have enough wire that you can tune up. And this is on both sides, both sides of the dipole. Are you getting the picture or I'm not being too clear?
K1JEK website.
K1JEK. Apparently that website, K1 Juliet Echo Kilo, if I understand correctly, will show the Cobra antenna. And yes, I am. You've drawn a very clear picture of, by the way, people may think you've got to hold a dipole always flat out, parallel to the ground, and you're not allowed to zigzag and whatever. You're allowed to do all of those things. And it works like a charm. It just becomes a little bit more narrow band, and in some cases, a little bit more difficult to tune. And your idea of fly casting, assuming that a fishing rod is allowed in a New York City park, I'm going to be asking Mel that one in a minute. Beautiful solution, because now you do have the ability to launch that sinker a hell of a lot higher into the tree, as long as the Parks Department will allow a fishing rod. I'm a little bit worried they're going to make that illegal, too. I know that Chris wanted to ask a question about what he's heard so far. KC2, Zebra, Alpha, Foxtrot. Go ahead, Chris. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
All right, this question concerns antenna polarization. Now, I believe most the HF antennas are horizontally polarized. Am I correct?
I'm going to say that a certain good percentage of them are horizontal. A horizontally set up dipole parallel to the ground is a horizontal antenna. A quarter wave ground plane, a so-called vertical ground plane antenna, is primarily vertically polarized. And there is no preferred polarization, Chris, because on HF frequencies, one of the things that's not well mentioned in the book is that signal, when it goes off the ionosphere, it gets twisted in polarization. You may be using a horizontal dipole on Long Island, and the guy who gets your signal in England, so for instance, may be getting a vertically polarized signal after it's been twisted. So there is no preferred polarization in general for an antenna, and ultimately you're going to want to be able to set up more than one antenna that can favor each polarization. K1 Juliet Echo Kilo, was that a person signing in, or was that just giving us a website that gives a proper picture? Back to that person, K2RIW.
Yeah, that's the website of the Tenor. But I had emailed you that, and I think the list. But that's the gentleman, so you can build it yourself. N2GYN.
Okay, thank you. N2GYN. I guess that was that gave us that information. Very good. Mel, back to you. K2KEY, K2RIW.
So I want to acknowledge that N2GYN did send me an email on that antenna. I looked at it. It is, again, good option for an attic or, as you say, a coke and bag type of antenna or clandestine setup. All right, now as far as the fiberglass pole, if you want, look in QFT, August 2010. They are using that fiberglass pole as the basis for building a 160-meter vertical. That's one of the versions of it. Collapses down to, this one collapses down to 4.5 feet and goes up 32 feet. So if you want to see one of those fiberglass poles, and there they'll also tell you where they can be obtained if you want to purchase them. As far as the fishing pole, let's take, for instance, Floyd Bennett. If you are in Floyd Bennett and you have a fishing pole in your hand, you better have the required permit or you will be promptly ticketed. That's another thing. Floyd Bennett requires a license to carry a fishing pole, well, because they can actually consider that you're going to be doing fishing there, and you can't do it without the required paid permit, Dick, over.
That is incorrect. I have that license. And the way the license works is you have to be seen in the act of fishing, not just carrying the equipment.
To the contrary, I've seen them walk over to people as they're coming in, getting out of their car with the fishing pole, and asking for their ID.
Well, that's not the DEC's regulations. The DEC regulations is you have to be in the act of fishing. And that license is, there's two types of licenses. So you have a saltwater license that costs you $10, that is new, and then there is a freshwater license. Which license do they want? Do they want the fresh or the salt? It doesn't make sense to me.
I don't know, but it's posted. If you go in their office and it's posted there, they tell you right away the rules and regulations. And the rules and regulations, and I've looked at it because I've been in that office many a time, that if you are entering this field with fishing equipment, you have to show proper permit for using it or carrying it into this field. That's it, and I've seen them just question people, go over there, the rangers, go over there, and as they're taking it out of their car, ask them for their particular permit. I would assume it's salt water because that's what it is. It's on the edge of Jamaica Bay, over.
KC2 QAQ with a comment.
Q2SYL with a comment.
Glenn recognized, SYL recognized. John, let me first ask you, is a freshwater license less expensive than a saltwater license? And because Floyd Benton Field is right on the saltwater, I don't think they would accept a freshwater license. But over to you for that one, John.
The saltwater license is 10, and I don't know what the fresh went to. I know, I think it's less than 10, actually. But I won't be quoted on that. And I would like to confront that. I don't doubt what you're saying, Mel. I mean, I'm not doubting what you say, but that is completely wrong. Completely legally, wouldn't hold up in court, whatever. I can take a pole, walk around a lake. If I do not drop a line in that water, you cannot ticket me. And there is no way, no how, that you would not beat that in a court of law.
I hear you, John, but there's a little bit of a problem. Floyd Benton Field is a national preserve or whatever. From their point of view, they set the rules. And at the time you go there to run a ham radio operation, you're not necessarily in favor of starting a lawsuit that's going to be solved a year and a half later, if you know what I mean. Even if you are going to be successful, it's their rules, and you may have to live with them. Let's see how Glenn has gotten around that. KC2QIQ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Glenn.
You want to comment?
Doug recognized after SYL and after Glenn. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, Dick, on this one I'm agreeing with you 100% here because my dealings with parks, I'm in them a lot, and you're really at the mercy of the park people because it's not that you're going to get a fine for the fishing. That's not what they're going to give you the fine for. They're basically just, you know, seeing who's in the park and why they're there and what they're doing. I mean, that's what the park people do. They're there to really to protect the park. So they can challenge people for just about anything. And it's not necessarily that they're going to give you a ticket. They might not even have the jurisdiction to give you the ticket for the fishing well thing, but they can throw you out of the park. My best advice for most people, when you're going into parks, most of the park people are super, super friendly. And the key thing to do is find a park person, go over to them, ask them, tell them what you're doing. And in most cases, you'd be amazed at how much they are more than willing to facilitate a ham radio operator trying to play around hooking up a transmitter in their park. It's absolutely amazing. I've had so much success with that, I don't know, I don't even have enough words to go on with it. Back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
W2RU.
Okay, the third person in the list is Dennis. Glenn just ran into an extremely important situation here. Let's call it diplomacy. You have a parks department person approach you saying, do you have a permit for that fishing pole? And you tell him with a scowl in your face, I don't need one. I'm not going fishing. You haven't caught me fishing. You approach him that way in a confrontive manner, and you have just started a confrontation that you're most likely not going to win. A more diplomatic person starts slowly explaining to him, it may look like I'm fishing. This is a piece of electronic equipment helping me hang an antenna in a safe manner into a tree. can the rules be bent a little bit in this situation? Very similar to what happens when your neighbor comes to you in the old days and saying, I'm getting television interference, and you start off with a confrontive technique with him saying that the FCC is giving me a license, I'm allowed to be here, it's your problem. You say that to a neighbor, and you have just started a war. You be a little bit more humble to that neighbor, and you say to him that, okay, we have a problem, and until we solve the problem, I'm going to help you. What is your favorite television watching hour? I won't go on during that hour to interfere with your television until we can solve this problem. And I know the problem can be solved because every one of them has. If you work with that person, you're going to get a heck of a lot more a favorable response. SYL was the next person who signed it. Give me your full call letters and your name, sir. K2RIW in the tech net.
Good evening, everyone. The name is Bill. Call sign is KC2SYL. I have a comment about the fishing licenses and so on. I think we're mixing up several different concepts here. First of all, in New York State, the law was passed, I believe it was last October, that fishing in New York State waters, you need a saltwater license. And the current cost for that, I believe, is $10. There are some challenges in court, specifically in the town of Southampton and I believe in East Hampton and some other towns on the East End, where you can fish in town waters, and I do not believe the rule is enforced, because it goes back to the dongle concept in the 1600s and so on, and that I think is still in the court system. Secondly, freshwater license in New York State, which you also need, my understanding, if you're going to fish in fresh water in New York City, you need a New York State license. It's under $20 for a non-resident, and that's a yearly license, just as the saltwater license is. And I think the third item that we we discussed is Floyd Bennett Field, I believe, is part of the Gateway National System. So I believe the fishermen to surf there, you'd need a different permit, which is one probably offered by the federal government. I'm not sure where you would get that, but I think a lot of individuals go to the Fort Tilden area to fish. So I think that's what John was referring to. Just by carrying a fishing rod, I agree. I don't think you can be stopped from doing that, but you can be challenged as to your ID, I guess. And I agree with you. The diplomacy is probably the better course of action. Back to Net. This is KC2SYL, and the name is Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Nice, valuable information. Doug, I wonder how much fishing you've done with and without licenses. W-A-2-S-A-Y. Nice hearing you, Doug. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hi, Nick. This is W-A-2-Y. Name is Doug, as Nick has said. And every once in a while I actually do get on. Somewhat comment. I don't think that fishing rod is going to help you put it up or any tree at Floyd Bennett Field. After all, Floyd Bennett Field was an airport once, and there are no trees on it whatsoever. I have been there. There's not a tree in sight at Floyd Bennett Field. So you can forget about that.
I got a comment there, but W2EOK.
It is illegal own or carry or shoot a slingshot in the state of New York, anywhere in New York State, period. It's just plain illegal. Now, that sounds kind of silly and stupid, but I have been told by somebody who has researched this that that's the case, that you can't go into a sporting goods store in the state of New York anywhere and buy a slingshot. I don't know why, but that's the case. So those are my two comments. The one other comment goes way, way back to the business of the SMA connector. And I think the answer to that is you don't have to buy a special cable with an SMA adapter on it. You can buy an adapter from SMA to BNC, which is not too big and clumsy, and then you can go on to some kind of a lightweight cable on your handy togi and your handy talkie, and everything will be copacetic. I did that for quite a few years when I was mobile with an HD. Anyhow, back to that.
Very fine, Doug, and thank you. Eugene recognized, and you're after Dennis. Dennis, I think you had a further comment on this, but that's too bad that slingshots are not allowed, even though they're being very well advertised for the purpose of setting up antennas. I can't think of the name of the darn thing now, but I own one, and it works like a charm. I also own a fancy carp fishing bow and arrow kits that can shoot an arrow easily a couple of hundred feet in the air to get it over a tree. I could go over some very high trees, but I know darn well if I took a compound bow and entered a New York State park with it, I wonder if I wouldn't end up with handcuffs on, if you know what I mean. Dennis, go ahead with your further comment.
K2RIW.
Bernie recognized, but Dennis first, go ahead.
Dick, one thing quick though. Wrist rockets are outlawed. Slingshots are okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, my slingshot is a wrist rocket type. Was it? I think it was Dennis. I hope it wasn't Glenn that wanted to make a further comment. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, it was Dennis, W2IU. Two things, actually. Very simply, the saltwater permit from NOAA, N-O-A-A, and if I think of you Google NOAA and fishing permit or something of that sort, you'll probably come up with a link where you can apply for this thing. It is free this year. I believe it's required all over the place, considering that striped bass are a migratory fish, and that's saltwater, and why you would need it probably even with a New York State license, although I'm not familiar with their law. Something I've used instead of the rubber ball that Mel is talking about is the ratchet drive. Let's say it's a little small quarter-inch socket wrench drive, kind of like the old German potato masher grenade, is probably a lot heavier and a lot easier to get over a tree, especially with an underhand throw. I've been very successful in getting up higher than the 25 feet or so that Mel was talking about with the rubber ball.
Oh-ho. Let's hope that ratchet drive, when viewed by the Parks Department, it doesn't look like a weapon to them, and maybe it will not. Interesting. Eugene, you want to make a comment? K2RIW.
SWK. Dick, I got a question for you. What will happen if you walk by where a rip antenna, you know, 102-inch rip, you have a strip to it? Would they think that's a fishing pole? WCWK, that's my comment. Back to you there, Dick.
Yeah, interesting. A whip antenna that a smart ham is able to put loops on it when he gets on site, and the fishing string goes through the loops, and then he attaches his fly fishing reel at the bottom of it. Interesting. A whip antenna, which he converts into something like a fishing pole when he needs it. Very crafty. Whoa. I think we've gone through, Bernie, K2IO. Hey, Bernie. How many freshwater and saltwater and NOAA licenses do you own? K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW in the TechNet.
As long as you don't have a hook on the other end.
APG. Dave also recognized, but Bernie first.
Good evening, Dick in the Net. No, I don't have a fishing license. I have red hair and fair skin, so sitting out in front of fishing is too good for me. I was just going to comment the same thing that Glenn did. That the gentleman who said that a slingshot is illegal in New York State is incorrect. He needs to reference the New York State gun laws, section 265.01, subsection A, which does outlaw wrist-brace type slingshots, does not outlaw standard slingshots. In the cabling industry and telecommunications and the computer world, pulling cables, we use them pretty commonly to be able to get lines a long distance across drop ceilings. So, yes, they are definitely legal without a brace. With a brace, they are illegal. K2IO.
Even though you may be absolutely right as far as the law is concerned, Bernie, I'm reasonably sure when you and I run across the great big burly Parks Department gentleman from Floyd Bennett Field, and he tells you, these are my rules here. And by the way, I remember... Doug, maybe you haven't been there in a while. I've seen some significant trees, not super high, but there really is a bird sanctuary with trees on the, I'm going to call it the northern or northeastern section of Floyd Bennett Field today. Certain portions of that have been allowed to grow, I'm going to call it forever wild, as a bird sanctuary. So there are trees there. Not super high, but let's see what Dave's got to say about all this. How many fishing licenses do you own, Jade? N2APG, K2RIW in the TechNet, and yes.
get back to me then, Dave.
All right, go ahead, sir, Dave.
And yes, then 2APG. No, I don't, I'm not a fisherman. I like the little fishies, just leave them alone and let them swim. With regards to getting the wire antennas up into the tree, I have used with some success golf balls and tennis rackets. So use your imagination, a little string attached to the golf ball with some tape or something like that, and tennis rackets are easily available at the garage sales for a few dollars. Of course, you're not going to use your $200 head tennis racket to do this because it's kind of hard on the strings. But you can smack the golf balls up pretty high.
Another darn good suggestion. You think they'd stop you with your tennis racket and golf ball, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW in the tech mat.
Hey, this is K2KEY. Let me tell you what the rules are. Actually, you're not allowed to tie a antenna or anything to any of the trees. Yes, it's like you said, the bird sanctuary. Where we operate is on the south portion, the south, right, well, just before where you actually, you know, where the bridge is that goes to the Rockaways. That's where you turn into Floyd Bennett, where you go straight. So you're going, that's the south, and it would be the east corner of Floyd Bennett. That became a wild country. Oh, there's a lot of trees. You'd think you're out in the woods, you're out in the country somewhere. And the specification is there. You're not supposed to touch the trees. But we're very careful. I make sure we camouflage because we don't hang the antenna wires or anything over like the parking area where you can see, it's going over there, the feed line, and oh boy, I see it tying it off to the trees. We keep a low profile there when we have field day. They are fairly strict. And if you get one of those park rangers that gung-ho that wanted to arrest me 2 years ago because it was hotter than heck and I was there without a shirt on, I didn't know. He said, that's an indecent exposure here. So help me God. I have witnesses to this. He says, actually, he says, you know, this is a violation of regulations here. Taking a sunbath or working without a shirt on, Dick, over.
Well, when you get these really good-looking guys taking their shirt off, which is now, attracting women, I can see how that would give him a problem. Okay, you want to read one more, Doug? It's up to you. Mel, K2KEY, K2RIW.
So anybody that thinks they're going to go to Floyd Bennett and do what they want, they got another guest coming. There's a couple of park rangers there that, in fact, I had this past June. I had one problem, one that literally, if we didn't have connections right up to the, really up to the top, we would not have had a field day because he said, no way he's going to have a field day here. We got the necessary paperwork and all. He says, I'll discuss this with the head ranger, who we happen to know very well, during the week. Oh, field day is today. He says, no. He says, I suggest you just pack up, don't unpack or pack up and leave. That's before we even got started. So I was on the radio with a couple of guys. They made phone calls and finally got straightened out. They can be very, very difficult to work. You've got to be very diplomatic, as you said. Don't come on, gung-ho, strong-arm, because you will not get anywhere. You're just going to be literally escorted off, and if you persist, they will lock you up. They will arrest you. They have no qualms about it. All right. I'll tell you what, Dick. You better go on. It's 10 o'clock, and there's a few more questions, so we'll continue this at another time.
Okay. Dennis? Who's been very patient. Sorry, I skipped over you from the original sign-in. Dennis, W-2, India Uniform. You've got it. What are those guys in New Jersey doing these days? K2RIW in the tech man.
Hey, Dick, real quickly, what's the timeout on this repeater so that I can sort of watch what I say and how long I talk?
Make-believe it's 1.5 minutes, and then give an interruption every 1.5 minutes to reset the machine. Dennis, go ahead.
Copy, thank you. Nick, I want to take advantage of your tower experience. I'm sort of asking the question for the Raritan Valley Radio Club in New Jersey. We have a tower over in Greenbrook. It's about 100 feet, and the 2-meter portion of the tower is starting to give us some awful desensing. However, the 440 part of it has not been the problem as of yet. I know we've had some very dry